today too. That'd be great.
Blog Talk
okay.
Radio.
Okay.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2565. That's 2565. Tonight we have a wonderful guest. I am really just so happy to have her here. And I'm going to introduce her in a minute, and I see that we're getting a nice amount of people calling in. Thank you very much. I had posted on our Facebook also, so therefore people are they're calling in. All right. But before we get started, I do read the mission statement about NASCA, and then we go to our guests. And every 2 to 3 minutes, what we do on this show is, or I shouldn't say 2 to 3 minutes, that's not right. Every 2 to 3 times during the show, what we do is we, let the panel also ask questions and or maybe make a comment. And that keeps for the show to be lively and also gives more information to those of you that are out there listening. And I know you are listening tonight. Okay, thank you. We have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, neglect. And we do so 2 different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic. We know that it's worldwide. Okay, number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services and adult services as well of child abuse, and information to anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That's really important, the prevention one. I speak a lot about that. If you could only know how, if you had the education to learn how, and if people cared, okay, we could maybe prevent some of the child abuse. Maybe put a dent, as I say, in the statistics of child abuse. Cannot stop it, okay? We can't do that. But we can absolutely put a dent in the statistics. I believe that. I've been on this show for almost 11 years, and I've seen a nice change. People are starting to talk more. They're writing more books. They use their music. They use their art. All different ways. They go out and do presentations, all different types of things. So people are talking about child abuse, okay, and this is good. So I will say that now with this pandemic, this plague, whatever you want to call it, I have other words for it. We won't go there. Children are being more abused now, okay? They're being more abused now than ever. Because remember, a lot of them don't have school to go to. They have to stay home and be homeschooled. And unfortunately, a lot of times our abusers do come from inside the home. Many of us have it both ways. I had it both ways also. And I think probably so did our guest. But I'm not going to tell her story. I'm going to let her tell the story. And let me tell you something. She's got quite a story. Okay, her name is Charmaine Tigra. Was that right?
Correct.
Tigra. Yeah, Tigra Carter from Richmond, Virginia. And I don't want to read her bio, but she does say that she had a childhood of tragedy, and believe me, she did. And I'm not going to go into her story. So what we do here now is I just want you to know we have a full panel. Very good. I am just so happy. All the lights are lit up. This is good. She knows what I mean by that. Okay. Charmaine, why don't you start out by telling us your story, okay? And we'll go from there, all right?
I'll be glad to tell you my story. As she said before, my name is Charmaine Tigra Carter. I was abused starting at the age of 6. My babysitter used to go out and play bingo, and she used to leave me with her teenage grandchild to watch me and the other kids, and he raped me at the age of 6 for about 4 months, and kept telling me how it was and that we had a special kind of relationship, you know, the true pedophile kind of statements. And the only reason why I stopped is because, and he threatened me, which is the reason why I didn't speak, because he told me that if I were to tell anybody what was going on, something might happen to my little brother and it would be all my fault. My mom had just got divorced and she told me that I was supposed to look out for my little brother. So I felt responsible for him. So I suffered for months without saying any word to anybody. I cried myself to sleep countless times, woke up in the middle of the night screaming. And the only reason my mom found out was because when my brother got better, you know, because like I said, he was a sickly little boy. When he got better, he got upset because the boy and me would play this quote-unquote game that my brother couldn't play. And my brother got upset and a little jealous because I was getting more attention from the boy than he was, and he wanted to play the game. And it wasn't fair that I get to play this game with the boy and he doesn't. I just broke down and told him he didn't want to play this game, and I told my mom what happened. Her solution, which I didn't realize at the time, but basically told me a lot about my family. Her solution was to take me away from the babysitter, put me at my family's, my grandmother, my aunts, who watch me and my brother, and just leave it behind. And she told me that was yesterday, this is today, you need to get over it at 6.
Mm-hmm.
She I know grown adult women who can't process being raped.
Mm-hmm. Can you hold on a second? Are you like
sure.
cutting out, or are you pausing? Because we're having a little pause system here.
I think I'm maybe cutting out because I'm hearing that on my end too. This is what I'm going to do. I was trying to use my system so I can have my phone and everything, so I can actually you know, talk to you. But I think I'm gonna have to actually go on my phone. And actually call you, call on that way.
Call right back. Yeah, do that. That'd be a good idea.
Cutting out.
Thank
so
you, honey.
Did it cut out
yeah,
right now when I'm
you.
Talking to you?
Yeah, that's all right.
No,
go ahead. And
okay, I'll do that right now.
Go.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Mhm. Yeah, our guest is having a little problem with her phone on the other end, so she's going to call on her regular phone, and then that way we'll be able to continue the show. She has got a fantastic story to tell us. There's just so many things involved in this, and what a warrior. That's the only way I can put it, because of she's just you know, something to be admired, okay? So I'll wait for her to call back in. I think that's probably her down here. Let me see.
Okay, I'm better. Can you hear me now?
Yes. That's better. Yeah, that's much better. Now we can have the show. So where you had left off was, it's okay. Where you had left off was you were talking about your little brother, because I kept you going in and out, okay? And there were problems.
Yeah, so my little brother basically was upset because he couldn't play the game that me and the boy was playing. So he told my mom that he didn't think it was fair that I get to play the special game with the boy and he doesn't. And I lost it and told my mom that what had happened, you know, what was going on, and why my brother should not play this game with his boy. My mother's solution to the situation was she confronted the babysitter and the grandson, and, of course, he lied and said, you know, that I was just jealous and I had made the whole thing up. So my mom's solution was to just take me and my brother from the babysitter and put me over my grandmother's house. And my grandmother watched us from now on. But the thing that I remember the most was what she said that I should do about the situation, because I still had nightmares for months after that, wake up screaming, you know, thinking that the guy was attacking me. My mom told me that that was yesterday and this is today, and I need to get over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was 6 years old. You can't – I know grown women who can't get over or, you know, like I say over, but I know grown women who can't – who have a hard time processing rape as a grown adult person. I was six.
I understand that. I was as young as you as well. And then my brother started in, and with my brother, first was my uncle, my brother – and my brother said, oh, this happens in families. And that was the end of that.
Yes.
So I know that mentality. I know what you're talking about. That's rough. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, it's very – I didn't realize what it – you know, it was very dysfunctional, but I didn't realize that was dysfunction. I just thought my mom was just really hardcore. So, like I said, I went over to my grandmother's house with my aunt and my grandmother, and – I didn't get sexually abused anymore for at least 6 years. But over my grandmother's house and my my grandma and my aunt's house, I got physically abused. My aunt had went through a terrible divorce, and she was just mad at the world. And she took it out on me and my brother because we were not her kids and were causing her discomfort. You make all these excuses. The truth of the matter is she felt out of control and she wanted to control somebody, and me and my brother were it. She made me and my brother sleep on the cold floor in one of those duplex hallways. You know those houses, they have upstairs is for one group of people and downstairs is somebody else?
We would
literally sleep on the floor at nighttime in the hallway. Where after you got to the top of the stairs and you went to one of those rooms, we were on that little hallway right there. She would not let us come into the room. Yes. She would not let us come into the room and sleep in the room because my brother peed in the bed. And so I would wake up in the middle of the night soaking wet because he had peed on me, because we slept with one blanket, one sheet, one pillow for the both of us. And when he peed on me, I was not allowed to go into the room or into the bathroom to wash up. I literally had to just sleep like that. And then we would get beat with switches and belts. And the worst beating I remember getting, we were playing around, and her son got hurt because we were all playing around. You know how kids are. And he got hurt, and so she beat all of us for hurting her child. And she beat my brother's hand so bad that it had welt marks on it and it was bleeding. And my brother had gotten tired of all the physical abuse. He refused to cry. I learned real quick, if you cry and act like she was killing you, she would stop, because that's what she wanted. She wanted to feel like she was empowered and, you know, the, oh, my God, I can't help it, that kind of stuff, that's what she wanted to hear. So I became a great little actress and gave it to her.
Right.
My brother, exactly, because I wanted to be eaten to stop. My brother refused because he was trying to be a man, and she took her nails and dug it into the whips in his hand. And just squeezed, and my brother was... I could tell he was literally in pain because his ears and his nose were turning red, but he refused to wince or cry or anything. And she kept saying, if you just cry, because I was telling him, if you cry, it'll be all over with. And she said, yeah, if you just go ahead and cry, I'll stop. And she put her nails into his hands, and he still wouldn't cry. He just looked her in her face and said, "Are you finished?"
And, yeah, see, that's a rough, tough kid, all right? I did the same thing. I wouldn't cry either. But it wouldn't have helped me, though, if I had. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I understand, but with my aunt, she just wanted, like I said, a control thing. She wanted to feel like she was in control. So if you beat me a couple times and I start crying and boohooing and pleading and all this other stuff, she felt like she won and she beat me, and you know, and then she would stop. But if you didn't give her that, she kept going until her arms got tired.
Whoa. Yeah. No, that's just not acceptable. I don't know what's wrong with people when they whip children. I was whipped too. I had to make my own switch. I hear you. I know what you mean by
the loss. I mean, and you know, we had to do that too. We had to go outside, get the switch out the tree. If the switch wasn't big enough, she would beat us with that switch to make us go get another one. Or if the switch broke, we had to go back out and get another one. That's why I learned to cry. I became a great little actress.
Well, you know, look, I'm sure you felt like crying. You didn't have to even put too much acting into it. I was so belligerent, I didn't want to cry. Okay, it's an awful thing. I was like him, like your brother. You know, I understand this. I get it.
Oh yeah.
Let's go.
I mean,
Go ahead.
What you about to say? No, you were about to say something. Go ahead.
Oh, I used to make sure the switches had brown in them, because if they had a little bit of brown in them, it wouldn't hurt as bad, because, you know,
exactly.
They break quicker.
They break quicker, versus the green ones.
Yeah. See that? Same. You lived in my house. That's what happened. That's what it was. Yeah. Oh, my God. Our stories are so similar. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
We have quite a crew of people here. So what I'm going to do is go to them, and we'll do that maybe two or three times. Oh, my goodness, it just goes on and on. Everybody wants to hear your story, and you've done such wonderful things in your life. You really have. I'm so proud of you. Let me go up to the top. Yes, you bet. Let me go up to the top, and I'll just simply work my way down. Let's go to Pamela from Louisiana. Go ahead, Pam. Oh, go ahead. Oops. Thought her mic would open. Okay, she opened it for me. Okay, good. Go ahead. Pamela?
Hi.
Hi, honey. Charmaine. Yeah, go ahead.
Charmaine?
Yes, ma'am.
Sounds like you've told your story before. I mean, it's like, you know, you're not shy about telling this. It's like you want people to know it.
I do, and that's only because, as the host said earlier, which has been really on my spirit since 2020 started, more and more people are in this pandemic, and more people are getting abused and have no way of getting out. They're either afraid to call the cops, or they can't go to the shelters because of COVID restrictions, and they are so in the corner, left all alone and feeling totally isolated and abandoned. And I don't like that feeling for anybody to have that. So if I have to tell my story 501 times, I'm going to tell it so that people realize they're not alone.
So where was your dad in all this, your biological dad?
Don't know. Don't know who he is.
Oh, okay. How do you feel about that? I mean, I know it's bad, but.
Oh, no, I mean, and it's not his fault. My mom had relations with a couple of different people at the same time, and so she's not sure, and so they were never sure. So I'm actually doing an ancestry DNA test now, literally. I just finished it before I got on air, and I'm going to set it out tomorrow so I can find out who my real biological father is.
Well, that is awesome. I'm proud of you. So, do you know who it could be? Or, I mean, you've got some.
Yes, I do. There was a gentleman who actually, when my son was born, came to my mom's house because I was staying with her at the time because I just had the baby. And he told me that he might be my father just in case my son needed, you know, blood or organs or whatever. And just in case my mom's ex-husband wasn't a match, he might be my match. So, yeah, I do know who the contenders are. I just don't know which one is the real one.
So what feelings are you feeling right now?
Honestly, when it comes to the DNA thing, I'm feeling anxious because I just did the test and they're telling me it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks, and I know it's been years not knowing, so waiting another 2 months is like agony.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I am so happy for you, though. You're going to find your dad, and y'all are going to celebrate, I'm sure.
I hope so. I mean, I just hope it is who I think it is, because if it is, I have sisters and brothers who probably won't treat me the same way my mom's side of the family did.
So it'll change your whole family dynamic.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Okay, Carol. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, oh, you're welcome. Yeah, the DNA thing, I had mine done too. And I was right. But anyway, let's go to Victoria here. We have Victoria. Victoria, say hi to our guests and maybe have a question.
Yeah, hi.
Or, yeah,
hi, this is Victoria Kelly from Minnesota. And Victoria Kelly from Minnesota.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. I just heard a little bit of your story. I had one on your page too. I read a little bit about you too, but the time just got by and I didn't, you know, realize what time it was. That's why I'm late. But anyway, what you were talking about with the pandemic and the abuse is just, to me, astounding. When I first heard about this, that we're going to be in isolation, my first thought was for better women and children.
Yeah.
And now that kids aren't going to school, it's scarier than hell for me to think. Because I've talked to a lot of survivors, and they'll say that that was one escape for them. Not everybody, because, like, I got bullied at school, too, but it was better than being home. So, you know, the worst two evils. But, yeah, I really, you know, I can really understand that. And, like I said, I didn't hear your whole story, and I did have a question. Is there one of the potential fathers that you wouldn't want to be your father?
So, my mom's ex-husband is a nice guy. So I have no problems with either one of them. He's a nice guy. It's just that he abandoned me because there was always this question of was I his or was I not his. So I never really got to know him, like talking about, until I became an adult. And even then, it's still like, you know, he would come by and go, I'm daddy's little girl, and he'll do whatever I need to, and then he'll be gone again, and I won't talk to him for like 6 to 8 months. I mean, it goes like that, and I hated it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's great that you're doing that, because, you know, we need to get our questions answered, you know.
Yeah, and
I'm going to listen now to the rest of your story.
Yeah, and my thing is, I have to get that answer because my mom's ex-husband used to pick up my brother and take him out to baseball games and hang out and all that stuff, and I was never taken anywhere.
Oh, no.
So you know what kind of impression that leaves on a child. It makes you feel like a freak.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, when I got away from my dad, you know, he finally admitted everything he did to me, but then he said, well, I'm not a father anyway. So I had to go through blood tests. I flew my mom in from Texas to get her blood taken, which she thought was great because she got to visit her family for free. And, you know, I called her up and said, well, 99.9% he's my dad, you know.
Right.
And then she responded, well, did they tell you whether or not I was your mother?
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, because we have our babies in the hospital, you know.
No.
But, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that, Victoria.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll get back
you.
In a little while. Yeah. We have a large crew here. Okay. You know what? You're going to feel better. I think you're going to feel better after you know, because it answers. It's like we have a puzzle.
Yeah.
So many of us have a puzzle, and it's another part of the puzzle that gets put together. And I hope it's the way you want it to be, honey. I really do. Let me go down to Penelope here. She's my co-host for the night. open up her mic and see if she has a question to ask. Go ahead.
Thank you, Carol. I do have a question, mm-hmm. but first I have a comment. I cannot hold back. Charmaine, I think you are amazing. And I echo what Pamela said. I echo what Pamela said, like, good for you. What courage it takes. I'm so excited for you, you know, to get the truth of who your father is. And I'll tell you something. I think you're amazing because just so many of the things you said, just you are so wicked smart. You're articulate. You're brave. And, you know, whoever your father is, you should feel profoundly honored. I just had to say that. I just think you're incredible.
Really?
It's true. Starting a new year, I only speak the truth. But my question is, you know, I'm listening to your story, your incredible story, and, you know, back to the babysitter and her son and your younger brother, you know, and I felt like I got to know a little bit of his personality traits when you were also describing, you know, being in the care of your relatives and just he's willful, right?
Right, yes.
But I'm wondering, you know, backing up to the babysitter and her son, I know he couldn't be a part of the game. I mean, thank God, right? But
right.
He just seems to me, too, like he's highly intuitive and willful. And I'm wondering, do you think he, you know, he told your mother, and I know he was probably really young, he had some sense of something's just not right here?
Yes. I really do think he knew something wasn't right because he was slept in the same room I did. So when I was waking up in the middle of the night screaming and crying, he was right there with me. So he knew
mm-hmm.
something was up. He just didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God bless him and God bless you. But the fact that he went to your mother, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously you got into, you know, a different horribly abusive situation with the relatives. But thank you for answering my question.
Oh, sure, of course.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Penelope. That was good. Let me. We have Darlene here from Tennessee, and we're having a terrible rainstorm. Good God. Okay.
Yeah.
It's always something. Is it raining there too? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, Darlene, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello there. This is a new year, and you are embarking on a new change in your life, which is hopefully this is going to be, you know, you find out your relatives, and I hope it works out the best for you, you know, and all about that. And it seems almost like your brother was wise beyond himself as you are too, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever... You know, like if that would have been okay for her to, you know, stop whenever you cried or just think of that later on, it would have might have progressed to continue on to no matter what, just until she got too exhausted to hit anymore, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times abuse escalates.
Oh, yeah, believe me,
yeah.
I know that one too. I mean, honestly, all y'all have heard so far is what happened to me from the age of 6 to the age of about 11. It gets worse after 12.
Yeah, I am sure because it does escalate.
Yeah, it does.
You are strong in sharing your story. I, too, had to, but say we were beaten till they give us something to cry about, but, you
yep.
know, it hurts too bad not to cry, you know?
Yes, and honestly, and that's what my mom told me, you know, I need to stop making all that noise or she'll give me something to cry for. And I'm like, I already have something to cry for.
Exactly, you know, like, are you kidding me?
Exactly. Like, I already have something to cry for.
And thank you so much for sharing your story. I look forward to hearing more.
Sure, I'll be glad to tell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have William here from Alabama. Let me put on his mic here.
Okay.
There we are.
I got it on. There you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, was your brothers or anything involved in, like, living in any gang areas?
No, my brother never did any gang stuff. He had a temper growing up, and he was pretty much very self-destructive. He always would get into fights with anybody and everybody. So, no, but no gang stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just wondering because the way you were talking about having to take care of your brother and things like that, and that happens a lot in families that are around gangs and things. They're trying to raise the children right and things, and abuse and things occurs in that because they're part of the families and things like that. But I'll let you get on with your story.
No problem. I understand. Thank you, though.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, William. Okay. Let's see. I guess that's it. Okay, and that's enough. My goodness. Let's get back to your story. This is fascinating, and it's sad all at the same time. You know, we at NASCA, God, most of us have horrific stories, you know. And we don't take a yardstick or something to the story. We had a guest on once that said, well, I only got beat up once. No, you're not supposed to beat up at all.
That's one time
for
me. That's one time
for me. That's right. That's exactly right. That's right. You got that right. Yes, that's absolutely right. So do you remember where you left off in your story?
Yeah, so I was talking about my aunt and the things that happened over at my aunt's house. The abuse that happened, my brother, the last beating we got over my aunt's house, I was almost 12 years old. And my mom, by the time, back in the day, I'm 52. So when I was younger, they used to have what they call latchkey kids. And if you were 12 years old, you could be able to take your key and go home to, you know, after school and go and open your own house and go in your own house and lock the door and be able to be there by yourself as long as you were at least 12 years of age. They don't do that kind of
right.
stuff anymore now because it's crazier, but back in the day they did. So the last beating I got over my aunt's house was I was around 12 years old. My brother's about a year or so younger than me. And he broke something, I forgot what it was, and my aunt just really lost it. And she took him and took all his clothes off of him and beat him with a switch naked.
Yeah.
And then she told me, because, you know, it left scars all over his body, and my brother was very light-skinned, then she told me to put my brother in some warm water with Epsom salt. Do you know what Epsom salt does to fresh open wounds?
Yes. Puffs it out.
Yes, and it stings like all get out.
That's right. That's exactly right. I know what that's like. I'm telling you, you lived in my house. Go ahead. Yeah.
And she would not let me not do that. So I had no other choice but to do what she said. All I did was I purposely left the plug that goes in the tub a jar so that the water kept seeping out. And I had to keep putting fresh water in so that the salt would go down the drain. So,
right.
Like I said,
good idea. Very smart. Very smart. Go ahead.
Still trying to look out for my little brother. And so I did all that, looking out for my little brother. So I'm telling you all this for a specific reason. A year later, I was 12 years old, and I developed early. I got, you know, I got boobs at 12 years old, and I got full-grown boobs, not the little, you know, support
boobs
or the little, I got the full-grown
gotcha.
Over one summer, and unfortunately, my uncle took an interest in my development and started grabbing me and saying that my boobs were almost as big as my mother's. And then I'm turning around looking at my mom like, Mom, Uncle is doing, oh, pay him no mind. He's drunk. No, don't pay him no mind. I'm like, And so that same year that happened, I was over at my aunt's house. It was, I guess, I don't know if it was spring break, Christmas break, one of the breaks. And I was downstairs with my cousins and my brother, and we were watching TV. Well, what happened in condensed terms is I got gang raped by my cousins and my brother.
I'm sorry.
It seems as though my cousin his father let him watch pornographic movies, trying to make him, quote unquote, a man. So he had been watching all these pornographic movies with his father, and he wanted to reenact one of the movies, and that happened to be the scene. It was the gang rape scene. And because his father had normalized the pornographic movies, he didn't think anything was wrong with it.
I hear you.
And the thing that stands out in my mind that I still can remember to this day was they were holding me down, taking turns, and I cried for my brother to help me, the same one I've been protecting and taking care of since I was six.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't help me. He actually joined in because they threatened to beat him up if he didn't. And I'm sitting here going, so you're taking their side against mine.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nasty. That's what that is nasty. But I understand your brother, too, and I'm not defending him, believe me. I understand the mentality there,
Now that I'm a grown person, I've gone through counseling and all this kind of stuff, I totally understand both sides of the equation. But I promise you that betrayal hurt more than the rape. And I know that sounds crazy to some people, but
it doesn't, not to me. Mm-hmm. You cared for him. You trusted him and you helped care for him. And then for him to turn around and do that, even if it's for his own safety, we have to look at it that way, because of the others, that's why he did it. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that. I really, really am. That's awful.
Oh, no, it gets worse, because I literally had my personality split that day. I got, like, borderline personality disorder. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I found out later on. What happened was I ran upstairs after they finished. I ran upstairs, told my cousin, who was supposed to be watching us, which, of course, she wasn't. She was an older teenager girl. She was on the phone talking to her friends, teenagers. I told her what happened. My family, when my mom came home with my aunt, my cousin told them what I told them, and because she went down and confronted them, they all lied, of course. I was staying in the room crying, and I came out the room because I heard my mom's voice, and I was like going to run to my mom because after everything they did to me, before I even get anywhere near her, she didn't see me though. She told my aunt that Charmaine always had an overactive imagination.
Ugh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And when she told my aunt that, my heart just broke in two, and I just went right back into the room I was in and closed the door and just cried. I couldn't compute that they had just did this, and you are automatically assuming I'm lying.
Right. No, I understand that. I get it.
And so that's when Tigra was born. Because after that, when all the boys got away with it, they thought they could rape me anytime they wanted to, and they did. I made sure I was never in the room with all of them again, alone. But I couldn't hide from my brother, who's in the same house of mine. From that moment on, I had no peace in the house. My brother would come into the bathroom because we had one bathroom in the hallway that me and my brother shared. Anytime I was taking a shower, automatically he had to go pee. And so he would come in the bathroom when I was taking a shower and pull the curtain back at me and look at me and stare at me and try to touch me. And I'm telling my mom, and he's like, well, I had to go pee. And I literally had to end up buying a lock, one of those little hook locks, to put on the bathroom door every time I took a shower, because I couldn't take one in peace without him trying to do something.
Right, right. Terrible, isn't it? I hate it.
Oh, yeah. It was awful. I mean, I'm a grown person now, and even now at 52, I still have to fight the urge to not take a shower, because half the time I don't want to take a shower, because even though my son is not going to do that, it's just the thought of a man in the house with me when I take a shower still gets to me. You understand?
Oh, no. Listen, you're talking to the right gal. I won't get into the shower unless I pull his shower curtain open all the way to make sure there's nobody in there. So I understand how you're thinking. I get it. Yeah, I really do. That's awful.
And honestly, because my cousins and my brother kept raping me from the time of 12 until I was about 16 years old. And the only reason why I stopped with my brother was because my mom actually caught my brother raping me, because she came home a little early from work then. He was expecting her, and she actually walked in on him raping me, and she beat me and him because she said I was being frisky.
Uh-huh. Didn't you feel anger and hatred? And I'm thinking back to my time too. Sounds like we're almost like sisters. I'm telling you. Didn't you get like so filled with rage that none of these people would believe you? I mean, with the first, with your cousins and then your brother, when you were gang raped, and then this, and on it goes. What did that do to you? I know what it did to me. What did it do to you?
So that's what I can say. I gained this split personality, Tigra. Tigra was, she loved sex, so when my cousins tried to rape me, I would pretend like I was into it and, kind of go along with it. Because that way I wouldn't feel like I was being violated, I'm taking charge kind of thing. But it wasn't. I wasn't, of course. I was still being raped. I just was trying to change my mindset so I didn't feel so violated every time. I started getting sexually promiscuous with other people, other guys, figuring if I'm on a date with this guy or I'm messing with this guy, they can't get to me. So I started having sex with a whole bunch of different guys so that my cousins and my brothers couldn't get to me because I wasn't home. Like you were saying, going to school, the after school things, anything to try to get me out of the house and away from my family so I wouldn't be alone with them. And so as far as that anger goes, my mom had convinced me that I was making all of this stuff up. So I internalized it. I was beating myself up. I was cutting myself. I was playing with matches and setting fires. I was trying to kill myself. I internalized all that anger because my mind couldn't focus, figure out how could I love my mom and be and hate her at the same time. So I internalized it all.
Yep, that's exactly what happens. And, it's just an awful thing that we go through. And, we're like nothing. We're nothing. We're to be used, abused, and that's just the way it is. Not loved, okay? Not nourished in any way. No way. And so there's so many of us that go through that, and you're explaining this beautifully. You really are. You're doing a darn good job. And this anger that you speak about, so many of us have that anger. I know I was horrified. I just wanted to shoot them all or hit them over the head or do something. You know what I'm saying? Twist this one's head around like the Exorcist. I wanted to do all these things. And
honestly, when my brother was attacking me the first couple of times, after the gang rape, I literally used to kick him in the Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he tried to pull it out on me, and try to do whatever, I would grab it and twist it. I would take my nails and dig into it. I did all that stuff. And what happened is every single time without fail, every time I did that, he would go tell my mom, I kicked him, I scratched him, I twisted, whatever, and then I would get a beating.
Yeah. You couldn't win, could you?
No, I couldn't.
No, you couldn't. I'm going to go to the panel, but I just want to say that so many of the juvenile delinquents out on the street, that's the type of background they came from. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They run away from home. You know this, I know this, but I'm going to other people that know this that are listening. When you get abused like this, you just plain, your mind, you just run. You run. And you take off. And so often, you do become very promiscuous and things like that. And it's not because you don't know that it's right or wrong. It's just that it's a matter of, it's like, okay, I had it so much at home, I might as well have it here. And it just doesn't mean anything to you anymore. I understand. Right. I know where you're coming from. Yeah. Let's go to the panel, okay? Let's go to Pamela, okay? Pamela, go ahead. You're on.
Hi, Charmaine. Are you having a lot of feelings as you're going through this past? I mean, I know how I get. I get adrenaline rushing when I'm telling the story. It's not that I have bad reactions, but it gets your blood going, you know?
Honestly, as far as the emotional thing, you're right. I do go through the gambit of it's not so much I get angry when I'm talking about it. It's more of the things of I feel sorry for the young Charmaine, and it reminds me of the things that I did go through at the hands of my family members, and it's like, God, why the heck I had to go through this? Why is this? Oh. Okay, fine. And most of the time what ends up happening is when I finish talking about the stuff that happened to me, when I get off the phone or off the TV or wherever I'm at, I end up taking about a good half an hour to an hour listening to music, you know, eating some cheesecake, something to kind of bring me back up because I feel like I'm drained.
Right.
Right. It's like going back to that war zone again.
Yes.
But, you know, we do it. We do it not because we want to, but because we want to tell our story to help others.
Yes.
We know when others are hearing our story, Charmaine, that there's some that will, you know, that are wanting to do it, and they're seeing your courage, and that they're able to build up their courage, right?
Correct.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So did you ever end up seeing a therapist?
Yes. To answer your question, yes. I've seen multiple therapists over years and years, but it didn't take me, wasn't able to get any real help until I was in my 30s because every therapist I went to see before I hit 30 and my mom found out about it, her response was, don't tell them about anything that goes on in this house because what happens in this house stays in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And you were 30 when she told you this?
No, when I was 30, that's when she stopped telling me this because when I was 30, I didn't do anything. I wasn't around her anymore. but before then, in my 20s and my teens, when I tried to get help, it was always don't tell anybody what's going on in this house because what happens in this house stays in this house.
Mm-hmm. So what point did you realize, I don't care what she says anymore, I need healing? There's a point that you come to where it says, where something says inside of you, I got to get help.
So to answer that question, what made me finally get the help had nothing to do with I was at my breaking point. I got hooked on drugs trying to drown out the past memories and trauma because my mom and my family all told me I had made all this stuff up. So at 30, when all the flashbacks started coming back, I thought, it was my mind creating all this horror again, and it wasn't real. I was making it all up. So I tried drugs to suppress the memories, and it didn't work. It just made my life worse. And after being addicted to drugs, I went to rehab, and that's when I finally got to the bottom of all this. And, you know, like you said, when you've had enough, the drugs made me do it. If it wasn't for me getting on drugs, I probably would still be out there trying to cope and not having, you know, come through the other end. But the drugs made me go to rehab, and rehab made me go to counseling. There you are.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you for that, Pamela. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, let me get this. Let's go down to Victoria. You're on, baby. Hold on a second. Just rolling around here. Now you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Jermaine. You have really been telling your story well. I really, really appreciate it. It's tapping into a lot of my memories and feelings and stuff, too. And, you know, you tell people that, or at least I tell people that I'm grateful for recovery. You know, I'm grateful that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And they're like,
yeah.
Because if I wasn't, I'd have never dealt with all this stuff, you know.
Exactly.
My sponsor saw me guzzling out of a bottle. She said, hey, Victoria, do you think you might be an alcoholic? I said, yeah, I am an alcoholic, but I don't know if alcoholics can't be helped. She's like, what kind of alcoholic is that? So 33 years, I told her. But I did want to bring up, you know, I used to use the word promiscuous, too. And then I realized that, you know, when women have sex with multiple partners, they call it promiscuous, but when men do, they don't call it promiscuous.
Oh, yeah.
So I stopped using that word in my vocabulary. Not that I'm putting you down or anything. I'm just saying for me, you know, it was like just another way that I was blaming myself, you know. And of course, you know, my grandma very young told me all men want is sex. So I figured, well, hell, just give it to them and then see if they, you know, see if there's interest in, you know, going out on a date. Just, you know, get that out of the way or whatever. And, you know, I used to call myself a nymphomaniac because, you know, I never found any pleasure in it. But on the other hand, I guess I really thought that at some point I would feel love. And I never did.
Yeah.
So I was trying to chase that hope that maybe, you know, I'd hear other people talk about, you know, oh, yeah, we had sex and fell in love and blah, blah. Oh, God, why can't I get that, you know?
Right.
But I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
Couldn't at all.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about getting a switch and my brother and his wife used to do that with their kids. And my niece came over, and she had marks all over the back of her. And me and my mom reported that to child protection. You know, we're talking, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years ago maybe. And child protection had a court hearing. And on the way, my brother and his new wife were on the way to the court hearing. And she said, you don't want to put your dad in jail, do you? So when they got there, she totally denied everything.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That happens so often, Victoria. They make you feel like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Like you're going to put him in jail? No, his behavior is putting him in jail. It just...
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I know.
Let's let her get on the story, honey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got two more people here, three more people here. We've got a large panel tonight. Yes, we do. All right, this is wonderful. Okay, thank you for that, Victoria. It's amazing how our lives are so similar. They're not the same, but they're similar. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Let's go down to Penelope here. She's, again, my co-host for the night. Go ahead, Penelope.
Thank you, Carol, and hello again, Charmaine, and, you know, wow, to what Carol said, as we were starting the second segment, you were continuing your story. I was like, wow, we've walked very similar paths. And I really, you know, I have to say thank you for, as hard as it is, I know Pamela said, you know, asked you, how do you feel, you know, that adrenaline gets going, and, you know, why do we tell this again? Because it costs us something.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, having you articulate what I have gone through, even though I'm well into my healing journey and I've told my own story, it helps me, right?
Yes.
Because someone else walked in those shoes and completely understands, and I, we're standing with each other through it, you know, all of us on this call in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
And that, to me, that's so helpful. And so I wanted to say thank you. And I also wanted to say, you know, you said when you were, you know, when you were gang raped and your brother for the first time, and your brother had a choice to either be harmed himself or to join in.
Right.
And that your pain was just the betrayal. And boy, you know, you said, I don't know if anybody can it sounds strange, but I don't know if you can understand, but the betrayal is more painful. And I think for me, you know, and what I hear you say is, it's, you know, the emotional wounds can be the most penetrating and enduring.
Yes.
And you really articulated. So I want to also thank you for sharing that. And I think my only question is, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, and I know you talked about therapy. Do you have a relationship with your brother today?
So here's the answer to that question. I don't have a relationship for my brother because my brother found out that I wrote a book about the stuff that happened to me called Black Family Lies. And when I wrote the book, my family blacklisted me. I was the black sheep of the family. Nobody wanted to talk to me. So my brother found out that I was trying to republish the book with adding some, you know, updated information and do a movie. Well, when he found that out in 2020, my brother called me and called me one name from the curse word list all the way down to the end of the curse word list, and tried to intimidate me and threaten me because he wanted me to stop talking about the abuse. So I really had to block his number because I can't stop doing this. Too many people are getting helped. I can't stop it.
Well, you know, if you wanted a different story written about him, he should have given you different material, right?
Exactly right. I agree with you.
He needs to own. I mean, unfortunately, you're putting the truth out there, and you know, it's his problem that he can't own it. He did that to you.
Oh no, he thinks the same way my mom has taught him to think, that I have an overactive imagination, and I'm like Stephen King. I make all these horrible horror stories up in my head and then spew it out my mouth.
Right.
Well, you're the sister you're the sister who's breaking the cycle. Unfortunately, he's the brother who's continuing the cycle, and I'm on your team. So you just keep doing what you're doing.
We are all on her team. You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. Listen, we're warriors. That's what we're. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
We're warriors,
yeah.
And we're also educating a lot of people who are listening, and those that are going to go back to the archive. So that's very good. As far as my one brother that was sexually abusing me, I don't want anything to do with him anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if he's dead or alive, and I don't care. That's the way it is. He's not bothering me now, is he? You know. But anyway, that's how I feel about it.
And I understand that. But and see, I've gotten to the level now because I've done the counseling, I've done the rehab, I've done the spiritual thing, and I've got to the point now where I love my mom, my brother, my whole mom side of my family. I do love them to pieces, but they're not healthy for me.
No. They're toxic.
They're very toxic to me. And even now that they can't physically harm me, they're still toxic to me because they want me to live in their denial so that they can get through their life without having to think about these things. And I can't do that because living in their denial is what got me hooked on drugs in the first place and what got me lost in the first place. So I can't live in their denial anymore.
Right, right, right. Nor should you. You see, that's what we have to understand. We are people, and we deserve to be treated well, okay?
Yes.
We deserve respect as long as we're good people, okay? And we are good people. We were just people that maybe made bad choices along the way, and I know I certainly did out in the street and all that stuff. But, you know, okay, we're still standing. That's what I'm saying. We're still standing, okay? Even though those people that harmed us, you know, I never doubted for a second that it was my fault, ever, and I don't think you did either. You knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong, but somehow we did make it through. Yes, we did. Drugs and all. Okay, let's go down to Darlene in Tennessee. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, Darlene,
hey,
go ahead.
Hi, I want to tell you how strong you are. Thank you for sharing this story. No matter, I kind of feel sorry for your brother in some ways that he was taught this toxic trash, and I am glad that you're strong enough to rise above.
Yes.
That you are doing something about it.
Well, so, I thank you for saying that. I have a son, and I after living what I went through, I was not going to do that to my son, and I was not going to have my son do that to his kids. It was not going to keep going. No, I'm not. No.
Yeah. You got to keep them away from that toxic family, too, you know, to save them, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I did the same thing. So kudos to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, this we'll probably go back one more time only because there's so much more for her to tell about what she's doing today. I mean, I think she is awesome. Okay, let's go on down here. Thank you for that, Darlene. Thank you, honey. Okay, let's go to William. Okay, William,
yeah,
go ahead.
She's doing a real good thing about informing people of all this and stuff because you're also getting into incest and some of the people in incest and the families are a real no-no.
Yeah.
And that's what you're dealing with some of the what you were talking about. But there were others involved besides the family. But your story is really getting kind of out there to people. So thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome, William.
Yeah.
Because others really need to know about it.
Yeah, they do. They do. And she's doing it so well. You're a very strong advocate. That's what you are, very strong advocate. I should mention that she does have, is this your website? Yeah, this is your media website. And if anyone wants to look at it, it's mycarterentertainment.com. Okay, mycarterentertainment.com. And I had glanced at it earlier at one point, and it's well worth to look at. And then also, let's hear a little bit about your books before. You have two books that are published, and I want you to go on with your story. But she's the author of two published books, and one is called Black Family Lies, and the other is Ashley Terrace Murder. And
right.
And I'm not going to go any further because I want you to go into all the other detail, the other stuff. But tell us about your books. Are they on Amazon?
So I'm redoing the Black Family Lies one because I plan on doing a movie about my life, but Corona happened, so that stopped that for 2020. So I'm redoing the book. The book is coming out in March of this year, 2021, called Black Family Lies, and it will be on Amazon. I've already talked to them about getting it published on Amazon. And that basically is my autobiography talking about everything that I've been through. I've broken up into categories and stuff. That was the only way I was able to get through writing all of it. I had to break it up because it was just a lot. And Ashley Terry's Murder is actually online, too. That one, I told you I got hooked on drugs. Well, my friend, who I thought was my friend, owed the drug dealer some money, and he sold me for his balance.
Cute.
To the drug dealer. I didn't know this. And what happened was I thought he was coming in. My best friend was coming in. I thought we were going to have relations. And the drug dealer came in with a gun on his hip and said, he sent me. After that, I left the house that I was staying with him, never to go back again. And I wanted to kill him. Literally, I wanted to kill him. And since I know murder is a crime, I wrote the book.
Well, I think that's a better idea, yeah. I wouldn't want you to go to jail after all this stuff. That wouldn't work. No. So I'm glad you chose that path. But I know how you feel. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get back to your story, and then because there's so much more even after the books that we're going to speak about, and it's already, I don't know, five after, maybe that's around 9 o'clock, a little after nine.
I know.
Okay, so let's go to the communities. What are you doing? No, not that. Tell us more about your family. Okay, you're a teenager. What's going on in your teenage life? How did you get away from it? All this other stuff. Go ahead.
So what happened is, like I said, when I got caught by my mom, my brother, you know this because you have worked with this kind of field for years. Abuser is the most violent when you are leaving, and when you're not, when they don't have control anymore. So after the, when my mom caught us, he couldn't rape me anymore because my mom was like now watching him. So he then turned physically violent to me and started hitting me and beating me up and all those kinds of things because he couldn't rape me anymore. Still a form of control. We all know this. No problem. So I did what you said before about the school. School was my refuge. Going to school, I loved to read. I loved to write. So I would write my feelings and my emotions down on anything I could find, toilet paper, church bulletins, anything I could find just to get it out of my system because it was killing me not being able to say anything.
Right. I get that. Yeah.
And my mom told me that every time she saw me writing down or she read, I even had diaries and stuff, my brother would break into the diaries and read them. And so my mom was afraid of my writing. Because I was actually writing about stuff that was happening, you know, to me, just so I can remember that this is not my imagination, this actually happened. My mom took everything I wrote and she trashed it or she burnt it or she got rid of it. She got everything I wrote down, she got rid of. So I became a creative writer and started writing stories, not about me, but about other people who had the similar, going through similar stuff I was going through. But it wasn't me.
Good. Okay, good idea. Like that.
You know,
very
the high,
smart.
The high,
you're a smart lady. I like this. Go ahead.
To hide the emotion, to hide, you know, the truth and everything. Since I had an overactive imagination, per my mom, let's use it. So that's what I did.
I like that idea. Okay, that was very good.
So that's what I did, and I started doing the school newspaper and writing these stories in the school newspaper and stuff and, you know, got real good at that kind of stuff. So it kept me out the house and away from my brother and stuff. But he was still trying to control people and he couldn't get to me anymore because I was barely home. So he joined football and started taking his aggression out there. My senior year, I was ready to go to college. My brother had got kicked out of school for the umpteenth time. He never went to high school. He was still in middle school when I was going to graduate. Because his anger issues. He couldn't control me, so he took it out of everybody else. Anyway, he wanted me to sign a note that said I was my mom so he can get back in school again. Because he knew this time if he got in trouble again, my mom had told him he was either going to get a job or he was going into the military because she was not having this. I refused to sign the notes. My brother told me if I didn't sign it, he was going to kill me. Well, I believed him, and so I took off running into my room. And my brother had beat me up so many times, I actually had a chain lock on my door for my bedroom door. That I brought myself. And I had brought a phone, a regular phone, landline phone for my room that was a separate number from everybody else's because my brother had threatened me so many times. He would literally rip the phone cord out the wall. So I had different numbers so that if you yank it out in the living room, I could still call somebody from my phone. I ran in my room. I locked the chain on the door. I tried to call for help. My brother literally broke the door off the hinges. The chain was still on the door, but the door was falling off actually where the little hinges were.
Right, gotcha. And, what power, go ahead.
Yeah, just the pure anger.
Adrenaline.
Yes,
go ahead.
And he knocked it down, and then he came in the room, and I was trying to call, I wasn't even trying to call the 911. It didn't even dawn on me to call the police. I was trying to call my aunt, my mom, somebody like that, you know, to talk to him down. I was trying to call them, and he yanked the phone out of the wall, and then he knocked me down the floor and started choking me. So I was almost losing consciousness. I was trying to talk. I was kicking. I was trying to put him off him. And I was literally going black until his best friend who came to see if I had signed the paperwork heard the noise and came back there and literally pulled my brother off me. I had marks around my neck and She dragged my brother out the house. And when I called my aunt, you know, to tell her what happened, she told me that we need to stop playing because she's at work and y'all need to stop playing on my phone. And if you don't stop playing, I'm going to call your mom. I'm like, call her. Call her.
Oh,
this is not sibling rivalry. Sibling rivalry stopped as soon as she broke down the door to get to me.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so I went off to college, and I'm thinking, whoo, I'm away from this craziness. I am free. I am so free. I'm on my own. Yes, I went to a college that was as far away from my house as I possibly could get without leaving the state. I was just, woo-hoo. It took about 2 hours just to get there, so I knew my brother couldn't come after me, my family couldn't bother me, and I never thought about the fact that the abuse that I suffered and all the stuff that happened to me had changed the way I saw people, the way I dealt with people. It just changed me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got date raped 2 times in college, you know, messing with the wrong guys, not thinking they were not wrong guys. My mindset, I was attracted to abusers, predators. I was attracted to them. I subconsciously didn't know that.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And so I got date raped by one guy because I was at a fraternity party, and I was dancing mm-hmm. with the guy and liked the guy and drank too much, and then I realized they had put something in my drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is back in the 80s, early 90s, you know, before they were talking about date rape and college rape and Rupnol and all that kind of stuff. I had no clue. I was just dumb and whatever. Anyway, the point is, he raped me, and it could have been a whole worse situation.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up the next morning in his room, and he told me that he had to go to some meeting or whatever. And I told him where I had to go, and he wouldn't let me go. Next thing I know, I went to the bathroom. I came back. I was looking for my clothes. He had taken my clothes out of the room, and then he locked me in the room because he wanted to have sex with me when he came back. I was literally locked in a frat house dorm room.
Yep.
With no way of getting out on the second floor. The only thing that saved me from being a worse situation than it could have been was when I told you I went to the bathroom, my period came on.
Right.
And I didn't want to tell him, because that's embarrassing, that I just started my period. So when I say I need to go back to the dorm, I was saying I need to go back to the dorm. I didn't tell him why, because I didn't want to tell him I got to go back to the dorm because I'm on my period. So,
right.
You know, because that's embarrassing. So I didn't want to tell him that. So when he left me in the room, all I can do was sit on his bed and bleed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is what I did, because I couldn't, you know, I didn't have anything with me because he took all my
stuff. Right.
So when he came back in the room to, you know, quote unquote, have sex with me, he saw a big red stain on the bed and was livid. I'm like, what the heck are you doing? I said, well, you locked me in. I tried to get out. This is before cell phones and stuff. Anyway, the point was, he let me go because he had to clean the stain up, and he was mad. He was glad to get rid of me then, because that's why.
I'm glad your period started. All right, go ahead.
I'm glad my period started too, because, I mean, I might not have been allowed to tell you about what happened, because anyway. So the whole thing is, and in the meantime, I tried to kill myself 2 times.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Suicide attempts, overdose of pills didn't work. I got sick, I threw up, but I didn't die. I wasn't even to the hospital. I just got sick and threw it all back up. But I wanted to die because I can't believe I kept picking these people. And then I found another guy who I thought was real good, and we went out to a date and everything, and he raped me then because I was available. And when I got back to the campus, I told my roommate about it, and her boyfriend beat the living tar out of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He never bothered me again. So anyway, the point
sometimes
is
sometimes that works. That works sometimes.
Yes, sometimes
sweet
it
justice.
Works.
Yes, it does. Yep, I hear
he
you. Had that happen
alone.
To me once.
He left me alone and never bothered me again.
So
fast forward, I now am 3 years in college.
You've got
I
so much
pregnant.
Things here. You've got
oh,
so
yes.
many things. I'm going to pick them out. I'm going to pick them out because it's already like 9:15 or a little bit later. This
okay,
is outrageous
so,
what you've
wait.
Done. Okay, go ahead.
So we're picking up. So anyway, fast forward, I got pregnant, got a kid. In my 30s, I started having the flashbacks. I couldn't deal with them. The night terrors is what they called them. I did start doing drugs. I ended up losing my son to my mom. She took care of him for about 10 years. I ended up losing my job, losing the apartment I was staying. I ended up homeless, living in my Jeep for like 6 months doing drugs. And I end up prostituting myself to try to pay for the drugs.
Right. Right.
This is all in my 30s. I finally ended up in one of these, halfway houses.
Yep.
Where this guy was in charge of the house. He had a couple of people living there who were mentally challenged, and I was staying with him, helping him with the mentally challenged because I had been trained as a nurse before. Anyway, he was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. When he was doing drugs, he was sweet, nice, kind, whatever. As soon as the drugs got out of his system, he was mean, evil, and I got sick and tired of it. I couldn't deal with it anymore. I never knew which person I was going to get. I left and went to the hospital and told the people at the hospital that I was going to kill myself. I told them exactly how I was going to kill myself. So they took me in and I went to rehab and got straight and got clean, got to counseling. And in the middle of my counseling, I got into another abusive relationship. But the one thing he told me stuck with me. He said, if I went through all this abuse and I don't help anybody else, then I went through all this for nothing.
That's right.
And that stuck
and
with
that
me.
Stayed
so
with you.
Yes, and that what made me. That's exactly what made me become an advocate. I realized he was right. People would like to hear what I've been through. People would like to know that if I got through it, then they can get through it. And if I can at least tell them how I got through it, they might not be able to do exactly what I did, but at least it gives them hope that somebody did get through on the other side without ending up in jail, institutions, or death.
Right, right. And any one of those could have been a thing that could have happened. Let's move a little bit further. I mean, you've you've done so much. And I'm really just so proud. I want to brag about you, by God. So let me brag about you. Okay, we've got here. It says, my God, you hosted an internet radio talk show and a cable TV show called Survivors of the Lion's Den. You designed to serve survivors of abuse. That's what it was designed for. The Survivors of the Lion's Den TV show was on air for 3 seasons. She created a 60-minute performance monologue in 2011 titled Black Family Lies, Performance Monologue of Abuse and Redemption, which is based on her book. Black Family Lies, an autobiography. Yeah. Do you want to go from there? I want you to talk about these things because we don't have much time left.
Sure.
And you just there's just more, and I want people. I want to brag about you. Like I say, go ahead.
So I did the book. When I printed out the book, low self-esteem. I had a lot of low self-esteem. I did the book because I was working at an at-risk school, and I was a teacher assistant, and it was one of those schools where all the kids had been kicked out of every regular school, and this was their last chance before juvie. And I was writing my book, just writing in the journaling all the information and the stuff that happened to me. One of the kids stole the book from me, read it, and gave it back to me after class and apologized and told me the same thing happened to her. That's when I knew I had to print the book.
Right.
Because it was still going on. It was still happening. And so when I was printing the book, a friend of mine who was doing a TV show on local access asked me to come on as a guest to talk about what I've been through in my book and, you know, how God helped me, whatever, whatever. So I did that, and his phone line lit up like a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. So he wanted me to come back and do it again. So I did it another time, and the same thing happened. The phone lines lit up like a Christmas tree. People had all kinds of questions for me. And the person in charge of the studio asked me if I would be interested in doing a segment of my own on the Access Channel about domestic violence and sexual assault and just, you know, and like a talk show kind of thing. I did. And I did it, and it aired for, like you said, 3 years. I did a radio talk show on Blog Talk Radio called Survivors of the Lion's Den because I felt like I was Daniel in the Lion's Den coming out of all this darkness and, you know, fierce people around me, animals around me trying to attack me, but I'm still here.
Right, right. Well, it's just so wonderful. I mean, you've done so much. And you also were the editor-chief and owner of a local newspaper called Richmond Addiction News, that's RAN, that had a readership of approximately 2,400. And in April of 2012, you were awarded the Vagina Warrior. Is that correct? I've heard of that.
Because I became an advocate for domestic violence and sexual assault issues. I joined the Action Alliance in my state, and somebody nominated me for the Vagina Monologue Award as a warrior who had herself been a victim of abuse but came on the other end and now is an advocate. So, and I still have that award in my room. I can see it from right here in my because they gave me that award, and I was so honored because I don't do it for, you know, accolations or money or fame. I just do it because I was a little girl who was crying and begging somebody to come save me, and no one came. And I don't want to. And knowing that people are still going through there, there's still another girl out there right now who's crying for somebody to help her and nobody's listening or nobody hears her, I can't in good conscience let her sit in the dark without letting her know that I am here, I hear you, and we can help each other get through this.
That's right. That's what we're here for. You know, we're the voice for the children who have no voice. That's what NASA is about. That's one of the things. And so that's why when we have people like you on, who is so dedicated, and also you have so much talent. You really do. And I'm really enjoying talking to you. This is really good, very, very good. It says here in 2017, she was a screenwriter and executive producer for two short films entitled, yes, A Moment in Space and The Sitter Who Loved Me.
Yeah.
So you have done so much, you know. And, again, we don't take a yardstick and see who does this and who does that. But when we have people that come on who are so accomplished, okay, who have done so much and have done things with their time, who don't just sit there, get in the rut and say, oh me, oh my, you know, they go out and they are advocates and they teach people, you know, they do presentations or they get into film or they write books and all the wonderful things that you've done and a lot of us have done. This is what's drawing awareness to child abuse. Okay?
Yes.
Because when I wrote my book 10 years ago, there was only one other book on Amazon. That's why I asked you if you were on Amazon. I'm on Barnes & Noble, too. But the point is this. There was only one other book on child abuse.
Yes.
Now, 10 years later, there are people who are writing books. We've got books out there. And this is wonderful. And you've been a screenwriter, everything else, and look at the award that you won, okay? And that's something that you'll have with you for the rest of your life. And you know what? You can't put a price tag on that.
No. You can't.
That's exactly
honestly,
right. You can't. Go ahead.
My godmother, God bless her soul, she's now in heaven. When I went to her funeral, She was the one who actually was always in my corner, the only real family member, you know, to me that actually had my back. She, when she died, she had standing room only in her funeral. There were people literally waiting outside to come into the church to say goodbye to her. People were standing around the walls to say goodbye to her. That's how many people's lives she had touched in her lifetime, and she died at 53.
That's young. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm. And so me personally, when I saw that, to me, that tells me how many people's lives she's touched, and I want to touch as many lives, at least as many lives, as my godmother did, because that means you have helped all these people go on a right path, a new path, that they can now tell their children and their children, if it wasn't for blah, 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 ain't no telling where I would be. To leave a legacy like that, that's what I want to do. I want to leave a legacy that shows that I have helped people get on the right path or get through whatever turmoil they're going to so they can leave a more productive and happy life than they would have if they stayed where they were.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, some people become complacent. I like to use that word complacent because, you know, they feel, okay, I went through this, I went through that, I went through this, and I made it, and that's it. they don't go out and try to help other people.
Right.
And then you have people like ourselves, the warriors, as we're called, the soldiers, the people call us, whatever. We do try to help other people. And it's because we don't want kids to go through what we went through, okay?
Yes.
And,
yes.
And a lot of the if you know this, the organizations like, all right, like DIFAS and CPS and some of the others, some of them are good, some of them are bad. I'm not going to say which ones are good or bad. I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that. But I can tell you this. They need more people like you. They need more people like me. They need more people like the people on the show. You know, who
right.
have walked the walk, and we can talk the talk because we've been there, okay? And, you know, I'm just so proud of you, and I'm so thankful that you were on this show. And I'm hoping, usually we wait a year, you know, before we get someone back again. But you can call any time and be on the panel. We always need panelists, no lie, okay? I put it out there. You know, come one, come all, you know, so. We're having a fantastic guest tonight, and that's exactly what you were. And you are a very brave person. Penelope had mentioned that, and you are a very, very brave person. You didn't let it get you down. You didn't let it eat you up. You didn't let it define you. Instead, you went out and you made all of these wonderful accomplishments that I just read off.
Thank you.
Please
I appreciate
that. Well, let me tell you something. We appreciate you, okay? And so would any survivor appreciate you because you're continuing to go on and on and on to do what you can do. And you might get that legacy.
I hope I do because that means I've helped out a lot of people. If I helped at least one person, believe me, it's worth whatever – arguments I have to deal with my family or ridicule or whatever noise they make because if I save one person, that's one person who doesn't have to go through the same stuff I had to go through and who can now have a productive, happier life. I'm glad with one person at a time. I'm happy one person at a time. But we have so many, many people out here, and that's why I'm happy to be on your show, and that's why I'm glad to do your show, and I'll be glad to be a panelist on here, you know, anytime, because we need shows like this that keep talking the truth, because there are thousands on thousands of people. Those millions of people who died for COVID is nowhere near the millions of people who have been abused this same year.
That's right. Absolutely. And that can be physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, and neglected, and sometimes all of it.
Yes. Exactly.
So thank you so much. I'm getting the cue here. I'm going to have to end this show. I'd love to keep talking to you. You're fascinating. You're funny. You're beautiful. I love you. Okay, you're great. And I know the rest of the panel feels the same way, so I'll speak for them as well. So please do, you know, Monday through Friday. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have guests on, you know, that tell a story. The other 2 days, we have professional type people that come on, and we can, that's a Q&A, you know, question and answer type thing. So just pick your days, come on, and you're welcome. You are a NASCA family member. Now, you told your story, and you did it beautifully. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and you have a wonderful night, okay?
Okay, you too, sweetie. Okay, I have to end the show now, everybody. Good night now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Talk Radio.